Hello and welcome to episode 248 of Checkpoint Chat. We're back for now. Matthew's my name is Alessandro Barbosa. I'm joined by Matthew Figuera.
You ever miss doing something for like 2 weeks and you come back to it, you're like, how do I do this? It's been so long.
It's like coming back to work after a brief holiday. You're like, wait.
Only done this for hundreds of episodes, missed it for 2 or so weeks. Come back, I'm like, hang on, how do I angle my desk again that it's framed the right way? What apps do I open up? Will I sound right? Do I have the right episode number? All of this stuff.
Am I recording through my headphones?
Am I recording through? You know why that happened though? I'll tell you why. So for those of you who don't know, we use a program called Audacity to record all of our audio. And you can hit record and it'll show you soundbars, but I don't know, it's not always clear what your recording device is, at least not that I can see looking at it now.
Basic piece of software. Yeah.
It's a basic piece of software. Very good, very basic. But yeah. I played some games with friends earlier this week and I was like, I don't feel like getting my microphone all set up. So I just played with my headphones microphone, so I had to change my input settings. So that was at the back of my mind of recording now. I'm like, oh god, what if it's defaulted Audacity as well to it, my headphone?
It's microphone. That's a fair assumption. It's a good thing you picked it up like 2 minutes, well, not even 2 minutes in
to catch. Anyone else would have just recorded.
What do you use for PlayStation, like your headset there?
Oh, so how did I sound yesterday? We played some Helldivers.
Sound decent. It did sound like you were going on a run though at some points.
You know, wow. Because I was using the controller microphone.
Oh, wow, really?
So
no way.
I think the moment, I'm pretty good at keeping it close, like to my face, but there are times when I obviously pull it away and I'm not really paying attention. So it's a little bit too far. And it works.
I'm just picturing you like in the heat of battle playing Helldivers.
I mean, it's not like
and when
that.
You want to speak, you putting it to your mouth. You're like, orbital strike, and then you put it back down.
I mean, it's more just I'm sitting back on the couch and I'm just holding it my controller higher than I suppose someone normally would.
I'm genuinely surprised. It sounded like I would have never have guessed it was the controller, put it that way.
So
like,
there
absolutely not.
There was a firmware update this week or last week where one of the patch notes was like improved audio on the controller or something like that.
Yes,
so I was like, okay, let me give it a try. And I tried it and I've played Helldivers with you. I played a bit of Bloodborne with another friend earlier this week and no one's gone like, oh, you sound like very tinny or...
And it doesn't like it doesn't pick up background noise that much. It was only like, at one point, I was like, wow, someone has their mic really close to their mouth because I can just hear them like breathing.
It might have been John Michael because I know you guys are suffering.
No, he was talking when I heard that. So I was like,
And it was a fan. Every now and then you...
Maybe it was the fan. Maybe it was the fan. Yeah, could have been the fan. Because listen, it's insanely hot here. So when he was complaining about the weather, I was like, okay, thank God now I can complain about it too.
Yeah, too. It's great. Double-digit temperature, basically summer.
I went out to get food after we played yesterday, and it was, what, like 8 p.m. here? I can't say it was 30 degrees. And I was just like, this is stupid.
It's nonsense.
I actually hate this.
nonsense.
Really, really stupid. Yeah. I was using the headphones I have now. I actually got to use this little boom arm that's like always affixed upwards. But I think it sounds pretty good when I play multiplayer games once a year, you know.
It is funny. You can do Discord through PlayStation. I haven't tried it yet. We just used in-game, well, PlayStation's native.
So that's where I thought you were initially because I joined your game and, you know, I've muted like in-game chat because it sounds like absolute shit.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wonder if they... And then I couldn't remember how to find a party on PlayStation 5. So I looked on Discord on my phone and there was a little speaker icon on your Discord channel.
Friends, yeah.
Yeah. And then I saw and I was like, okay, well, maybe they're just not party chatting. Turns out Matthew just thought I was some fucking rando and didn't decide to add me to his party chat for like a good 15 minutes while we were playing.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's good times. Yeah, nice. Good times. Then I got added to the Liberty channel.
For democracy.
Yeah, for democracy. I guess we should just dive into it. It's Checkpoint Chat. We're talking about a lot of video games today because, I mean, if you are listening to this and you do not know why we haven't been around for a while, go listen to the previous episode. But we did say we would be more sparse with episodes so that we could maybe just actually enjoy more games at a time or get to more things at a time and chat about things that we want to. And that's kind of what we're doing. I think for the past, has it been 3 weeks, 2 weeks since the last? I can't even remember.
Weeks, yeah.
Yeah.
About 2 to 3 weeks to be exact.
Turns out a lot of games came out in that. It has been relentless this year.
Yeah.
Not just in terms of volume, but in terms of quality.
Oh, yeah.
As well. Like every game coming out is like 80, 90, you know, aggregate scores, must play sort of titles. So lots to talk about today. But the thing at the forefront of both of our minds, I think, is a game that neither of us thought we'd actually enjoy that much, and that's Helldivers 2.
Helldivers 2. Kinda,
this game kinda me surprised. Fucking rules.
Really oh good.
My God, it is so good. It. Okay, I tried the first one. I never got into it at all because I was just playing solo, and it was like, I don't know, I was chatting about it on Discord to you guys this week where I was like, yeah, it came out around the time where these top-down strategy, or not strategy, like squad-based shooters were kind of in vogue. You know, you had Helldivers, you had Alienation from Housemarque, stuff like that. And I never got into any of them. I just didn't vibe with them. So when, you know, Helldivers 2 got announced all these years later and they're like, oh, it's a third person perspective. I was like, oh, that's quite an interesting change. Good luck to them. It doesn't look that, you know, interesting. But I understand now why people like the first game, you know, first off. But also now why this change to third person is just so much better. It's because it puts you like in this chaotic action in a far closer perspective than the top down ever did, and you're really in the thick of it when every person in your squad is calling down orbital strikes or like strafing hell runs or like a machine gun turret that has no idea what friendly fire is, or like a sphere of mines that detonate even on friendlies, and it's just absolute chaos and great third person shooting, and I love every moment of it. It has such a sense of comedic timing when it isn't even meaning to be comedic, and I love it for that. It's so good.
It's I'm right there with you where this sort of popped around, and I knew like Helldivers 2 is coming out, and then I was like, I never really played the first. I know it's beloved by many. Sort of like, can you call it like a cult hit? Because I know it was very good, but I feel that only a select number of people I know played it and loved it. It wasn't like this commercially huge success, at least not to my knowledge. When Helldivers 2 came, I was like, you know, cool, whatever it is. It's just a switch to third person. So I booted this up last weekend because we got review code. I think it did launch about last week sometime.
Around about then.
To try it out. And the first hour was like, yeah, it's cool. You're playing a bit solo. You're doing the tutorial, whatever. And then I started playing with other people and getting to the harder missions. And man, this game just clicked. Because it's exactly that. You're in the thick of this action, but just the comedic timing, completely unintentional. Because to be clear, friendly fire is on in this game. Something you learn very quickly when you accidentally shoot a teammate if they strafe in front of you, or you call down an orbital strike and someone happens to be too close, including yourself. And just that combination of chaos, but the chaos with, you know, just this balancing of you just pull through every encounter sometimes you don't. It's just so good. The chaos is just really good, and it looks good, and it feels so much fun to play. So, like, color me surprised. I've put in maybe, like, I mean, I haven't put in dozens of hours. I've played maybe about 12 hours or so. And I'm definitely going to play more.
It's a decent amount.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, I was telling someone yesterday, I don't know, maybe it was you guys, but the way it weaponizes friendly fire is so smart.
Mm.
Like, it seems so simple to think about, like, okay, yes, friendly fire's on for everything. But it like weaves that into every mechanic as well. Like the sentry turrets I was talking about earlier. It says in the description, like, will shoot at friendlies if in the way of an enemy. So, like, it does not care. It is only looking for enemies. And if you happen to walk in front of it, or if you are just in front of its nearest enemy, it will turn towards you and fire on you. It does not care.
Yeah.
The same thing for, like, other stratagems. Those are the sort of, like, special abilities you get to equip and use quite frequently through matches. I thought they were quite limited, but, like, you're meant to be using these things
all the time,
all the time. Yeah. If you throw down an orbital strike, you have this, like, beacon on the floor that shows you where the thing's going to come. But, you know, the strike happens so quickly that if you just wander slightly in its direction, or if you are where a teammate threw it down and they're like, you need to get away from there, you have very little time to react. But at the same time, enemies are coming from all directions. So the temptation to just use these things with sort of reckless abandon is kind of there and required at the same time. So you have to balance this complete, like, reckless nature to the action while also not completely annihilating your teammates constantly in and out. And I think it's just a really smart balance of combat that works extremely well.
Yeah.
And it's just funny because it's like sometimes things don't go according to plan. And when they don't, they're just hilarious because you're given so many opportunities to revive your teammates.
Oh, yeah.
But again, to the point where it is balanced enough that the combat still feels challenging, but it doesn't feel like, you know, like, fuck, why did you kill me? Now we're down to two revives at the beginning of a mission. You know, it's really thoughtfully put out there.
Yeah, I think that I'm genuinely surprised, and I don't know if it changes at harder difficulties, but the number of revives each team has, it's like you can die many times and you can still complete a mission. I'm glad it doesn't punish you that way. Like, again, this goes up to, I think there's like 8 or 9 difficulties, which is just insane.
Really?
We're on, like, we've played medium, maybe 3 or 4 of the 8 or the 9, so... then I'm like,
and we played a challenging one yesterday.
Yeah, I'm like,
and it
how
was
do you play
insane.
Anything harder than what we're currently doing?
Yeah.
But yeah, there's enough respawns to go around, which is cool. You know, it would be a bit shitty if you arrive, it's like you've got one extra life, but then you have to be super coordinated. But I guess just quickly, if you don't know what Helldivers is, I know we've explained what kind of game it is, but the premise is it's a silly premise to begin with, and like intentionally so. You are a citizen of Super Earth and you just have to travel across systems delivering democracy across two enemy types. So if you're watching the video feed, you'll see there's a lot of bugs as one enemy type, and the other is basically like robots that remind me a lot of Terminators. And you combat
with
these
little chicken walkers from Star Wars.
Yeah, just a mishmash of everything. And you have to do a number of things against these enemies across different missions. So, for example, one mission will see you having to launch a satellite. So you land on the map, you've got to go get launch codes on one side, take it to the rocket on the other side, and physically input this code and launch this rocket, extract. And now that sounds quick, but a mission can be anywhere from 10 to 40 minutes, because along the way you've got the option to do side objectives. You can go, oh, okay, we've got to get the launch codes, but there's a bug nest. There's 2 bug nests on the way. Let's close them on the way there. And you get bonus XP for engaging with these side objectives. So it makes matches feel pretty dynamic and different, because you never know what you're going to actually do. I think I could be wrong, but I feel that there's a level of procedural generation that's happening with each map. I don't know if it's like a fixed, this is a definitive map that you're playing now, this is a definitive mission, or you know, it's one of those things where you launch onto a planet and it knows to put 3 objectives on that map and it just generates a stage for you. Like, I'm not quite sure. I think
there's an element of that there. Yeah.
But it's the matches are varied. Well, the missions are varied enough that it, while there are times you're doing the same sort of thing, just the nature of how you're tackling everything, it just always feels different. It's just, yeah, it's, I'm just genuinely surprised by this game. I did not expect to like it as much as I am. Like, I'm hooked.
Yeah.
It's
absolutely. Absolutely did not expect it. I was just like, oh, okay. You know, when it came out and we got code, I was like, Matty, do you want to check it out? You're like, yeah, I'll give it a go. And then, you know, it was sort of like everyone online started talking about it. And I was like, okay, this looks interesting, maybe. And now that I've given it a good go, like, I'm hooked on it.
I'm also amazed just how successful it's been. And that's not at all a knock against, like, you know, I didn't expect the game to flop, but it's like when it's breaking records on Steam and it's got such a healthy player base, which shows no sign of slowing down, at least not yet. Yeah. I'm like, damn, okay. Like,
it's the biggest Sony amazing, launch on PC.
But it's amazing that so many people have picked it up, because I feel that other people would have our exact reaction. Like, oh, it's Helldivers. Like, I never played the first one, but I think there's enough talk about it online and the marketing's been really good that people are actually picking it up and playing it. So yeah, good on this team. I think it's like massive success. Mm-hmm. It's like this seemingly, and again, not like a no-name brand from Sony, it's just like it's definitely one of their lesser known titles. So very cool to see it doing super well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think props to the development team on being so open about some of the, you know, issues they've had with launch and stuff like that, because, you know, the demand for the game was exceptionally higher than they expected it to be at launch, and they've been dealing with that. And I think they've been very transparent with, like, hey, this is what's happening, this is how we're going to remedy it, it will take time, you know, this and that. And you can tell by the numbers that the game, you know, keeps pulling in, that people are willing to put up with those issues because the game is so good, but also, I guess, appreciative of just being kept in the loop of what's happening when there are issues.
Yeah.
It is just kind of insane that you compare this to, say, it had, 200,000 concurrents on Steam at one point. I think it's still hitting close to that number. Yeah. And then you look at something like Suicide Squad that is barely at 1,000 now, and you're like, wow.
I would not have called that
at all.
That no one, not a single person has that on their bingo card.
No, definitely not. I mean, I didn't think Suicide Squad was going to set the world on fire, but if you told me, oh, Helldivers is going to have 200 times more players online at a time, I would have been like, are you okay?
Yeah. What a way to throw money away at a silly bet like that.
Yeah. Exactly.
Last thing I'll say on Helldivers, it's not a full $60 game. I think it's slightly reduced. I don't know if it's 40 or 50. But point is, it's not a full price AAA title.
But that said, it does have the trappings of it's got a battle pass, for instance. That reminds me a lot of Fortnite, where it's like you've got a free route and a premium route, and you use medals that you earn during missions to unlock things on the battle pass. And the more you spend on the battle pass, the more pages you unlock to unlock more things. Mm-hmm. But if you want the real shit, that's on the paid one. And it was kind of a bit weird yesterday. I think John Michael pointed out that on the premium one, there are full-on weapon unlocks, or like modified weapon unlocks, that you just cannot get otherwise. So you get like an explosive assault rifle.
So we need to investigate this, because you're right, there are two battle passes. However, we can spend medals on the premium one. It's just a lot more expensive, which makes me think that if you pay money, like, again, I need to investigate this, but I feel that maybe if there's a system where if you buy the battle pass, quote unquote, maybe you're earning medals faster that you can just, you can actually spend your way through the premium one. But
I did see
last night, we're not locked out of it. It just, whereas on the free to play battle pass, let's call it, a weapon might cost like 5 to 10 medals. The premium battle pass is like 20 medals for a similar weapon. So because I bought that explosive assault rifle last night, it's like, oh, I actually can buy it. It's just, it's a lot more expensive.
Okay, so that's different then. Okay, yeah. I thought it was completely locked out, really bad.
That'd be bad,
Yeah, but if it's just like more expensive, I mean, even then it's a bit more bad, but at the same time, you can still, it's like redefining standard progressions. Like if you want to pay, you can make the progression faster, whatever.
Yeah.
I think they've got to balance that keenly, but at the same time, I'm not playing this game and being like, damn, I feel like I'm missing out on something yet, you know?
No.
Yeah.
It's good.
It's good. I'm keen to play lots more of this game because it is ridiculous. And I haven't laughed as much as I have playing in multiplayer game as I have with this. It's just
actual tears running down my
absolute
face.
Absolute absurdity.
Times.
Just the amount of times that I think I'm safe and then I just die.
I'll even say, playing with a party like you guys is obviously the optimal way, but even playing just with random strangers is, I'm the game does have voice chats, but I've never spoken to other random strangers online. But just playing the unspoken communication, getting through objectives, it's good fun. And the game's in such a healthy state, you find a party within seconds.
I've had very good experiences with the quick play. I haven't struggled at all to find parties. And yeah, like you said, it is a lot better with friends just because you have more dynamic missions and objectives. Solo is like totally viable, but you're, I think, locked into like easy modes because anything above that, you're just not going to have a good time.
Yeah.
Helldivers 2, it's good.
Yeah,
it's good. I think that's where our overlap ends.
I know.
We've been playing all sorts of
stuff. We played a little bit of Tekken. I know you've played very little of Tekken, but we've both played.
You're like an extremely little amount. So guide me through your time with
Tekken.
King of the Iron Fist. Is that what it's called?
I sincerely hope so. So let me give you some.
What a way to start that cutscene. Jesus.
Let me give you some context on my history with Tekken. So I played Tekken 2 on the PlayStation 1. A lifetime ago, like truly decades ago. And that's the only Tekken I've owned since Tekken 8. Everything from Tekken 3 onward, it's been experienced like through a friend at a random person's house that has it on PlayStation. So I'm way behind in terms of knowing in depth the mechanics, the story, etc. So I did a bit of reading before diving to Tekken 8 just to catch up. And what happened, let me tell you. Lots of people being thrown off cliffs. Lots of Mishima nonsense.
Into volcanoes.
Lots of devil genes and coming to terms with that. And Tekken 8 picks up there with Kazuya being the big bad and his son Jin trying to stop him. Trying to come in terms.
Shocker.
Shocker. You know, does he embrace the devil gene or does he... Yeah, but... Story, I'm going to come out and say it is absolute nonsense, which I think no one expected Tekken 8 story to set the world on fire. So if you're coming in for the story mode, expect some good eye-rolling action and don't expect a long playtime. I think it takes like 3 to 4 hours to get through the 15 or so chapters.
That is quite short.
It's super short. And most of the time you do actually play as Jin. So if you don't like Jin... Good luck, Godspeed. But the real meat and bones of Tekken lies, obviously, I mean, it's a fighting game. You're there to play against other people online. And on that front, it absolutely nails it. So I was saying to you, I'll talk about the systems shortly, but if you don't know how to play Tekken, for example, you don't know how combos work and air juggles and, you know, what are these, all these meters, there is an arcade mode, which... kind of reminds me a little bit of Street Fighter story mode where you make an avatar and you are guided through a story. Street Fighter's is a lot more RPG-esque, but in terms of how it holds your hand and it guides you through the mechanics of the game, that's where a newcomer should probably start, because then it does talk about, you know, Tekken is the game, if I'm not mistaken, that introduced air juggling to fighting, like the whole fighting genre. So it's very big on that. If you don't know what edge juggling is, that's launching your opponent in the air and then keeping them up there with combos because they mm-hmm. can't block your attacks. But then Tekken also has two bars, which we'll get to, I guess, when gameplay shows. You got your rage bar, which I think return, it's been a persistent thing since Tekken 6, if I'm not mistaken. When you get, when you, your character hits lower health or when it gets below a certain threshold, you get the opportunity to counterattack with a powerful move, which does like a significant amount of damage. But the biggest introduction to Tekken 8 is this thing called the, I'm going to butcher these names because it's very technical, but in my head, it's just the heat bar or the heat system.
I think that's right, yeah.
Each round, you start with this bar full, okay? And you can activate it at any point. And I think it lasts about 10 or so seconds. It's this bar that you activate, it drains. When you're in this heat mode, your attacks do chip damage. So your opponents, you know, even if they're blocking, you'll still do a bit of damage to them. Your moves do more damage. And I think you unlock entire move sets. So it's this cool thing of, you know, I think what they're trying to do with Tekken 8 is really push aggression. Because the moment your heat mode is activated, like you want to get in and do attacks because you obviously want to do mm-hmm. chip damage and maximize your damage. The trade-off there, though, which is quite this interesting balance, is that obviously your opponent has access to the same bars you do. So when you pair this heat bar, which you can activate at any moment, and this rage bar, which triggers when you get to low health, it's this interesting balance of like, okay, for example, like, I start a match, my opponent absolutely destroys me with their heat bar, gets me to low health, but I can also now counterattack with my rage bar and my heat bar to do huge amounts of damage. So that's just like a very surface level understanding or explanation of the systems. But as for the game itself, it's Tekken. Like Tekken, I think, remains probably my favorite fighting franchise purely because I've got that connection to Tekken 2. And if you've never played Tekken, it is, I mean, how do you describe it? It's like a fighting game, but not necessarily on a 2D plane. You're sort of in like a 3D arena.
Yeah, it's definitely
arena.
Not. It's like it rotates in 3D, yeah. So there's definitely ways you can avoid or hit people in.
Yeah, like you can step
dimension
down or
that's not
or
like normal. Yeah.
And it is one of those games where there are tons of combos, but you don't need to know it be. You know, if you want to get into the nitty gritty, you want to get sweaty online, like there's obviously a lot of depth there, but you can 100% get away with just mashing the buttons. You're going to do some really cool combos. And what's cool with Tekken 8 is that there is a, I can't remember what the mode's called, but you can flip between just like a normal mode and I suppose like an assisted mode where.
It's called a special style. If
it's
I'm
a
mistaken.
Special style. If yeah. you put that on the game, like does a lot of the heavy lifting for you. You can push.
Yeah.
I think it's like
the assisted mode from all the games.
From all the other games.
You know, the fighting
yeah.
games we've seen recently, yeah.
So it really simplifies the game to the point where you can just spam square for, you know, to string combos together, then pepper in triangle to do air juggles and X and circle do like low attacks or grabs or something. So this game, it makes this game like instantly accessible to newcomers. And again, if you're going to go online and do that, you'll probably be destroyed by people who actually know how to play the game. But it is cool that modern fighting games, like I remember Street Fighter 6 last year. Street Fighter 6 is not necessarily, it's not impossible to get into, but I think there's quite a high skill ceiling. But there was also an assisted mode, which just simplified combo inputs. Mortal Kombat also had something similar, if I'm not mistaken, and now Tekken 8. The same thing where it just makes all these fighting games are now less daunting as you know to newcomers, which I think yeah. is really cool. Tekken 8 is a package though. I've played a bunch online. I've actually played so obviously I'm from the UK. I've played in the lobbies here, had no issue. The lobbies are nice and full. But what's cool is that there are African lobbies as well. And I've joined those and I've played against people And the roll, I think it's rollback netcode works well. I've played a bunch with John Michael Michael. And if there was lag, I never noticed it. It felt like that's we were cool. playing like seated next to each other. So yeah, if you're buying this in South Africa and you're like, you don't know how it's going to work internationally, I think it'll work absolutely fine.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You ended your sentence there as you playing as Kuma just did the, what the fuck is happening in this game?
Let me tell you, that's Kuma's rage attack.
Okay, so Kuma's rage attack is, okay, firstly, if you don't know, Kuma, big bear. Just a bear. Like, with a
straight up
vest on. Pulls out a gigantic fish.
Mm-hmm.
Wax Paul Phoenix, you know, big hair guy without big hair anymore, mm-hmm. over the head with it. You think that's it. The fish then turns into a rocket-powered drone, which flies into Paul and explodes.
Mm-hmm. You've seen nothing.
This is a bear.
This game goes places, let me tell you. And
this is why Winnie the Pooh should have never been put in the public domain.
Please, somebody make a Winnie the Pooh skin for Kuma on PC.
Oh my God.
Thank you. Thank you in advance.
There's so much that's happened while you've been talking. I've been listening intently, but I've been soaking in what's been happening in this like story mode. And I'm just like, okay, firstly, there were two guys talking in a submarine. Now they're fighting in the Colosseum in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's just a bunch of fighters. Now Paul Phoenix is looking like a hobo. Also, he's fighting a bear. And then that salmon thing happened and I just couldn't.
And that was it.
Yeah, that broke me.
Tekken 8, good time. It's look, if you're a Tekken fan, you know what to expect. It's just ridiculous story, ridiculous attacks and combos. Yeah, it's a good time.
I very briefly played it. I was hoping there would be like a tutorial mode, which I think has become, I thought was commonplace in fighting games. It's been definitely in Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter, where they have like a guided like tutorial to the fundamentals of the game.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to be that yet, but you've told me that that
arcade
story
mode
where you make arcade mode very much takes that place. So I need to give that a go because playing without that context, I was lost.
Mm.
And then the practice mode lets you do these cool things where you can pick a character and then they've got combo challenges. So they show you effective combos with that character and then you have to try and do all of them.
Mm.
And I was just playing as King because I thought, okay, a grappler would be a bit better. Wow. Those combos are the air juggle preciseness of everything is just incredible.
Mm.
Like really, really hard on the timing. And yeah, so I might play the story of this game and not touch it ever again because I just don't have the patience for that sort of, oh my God, there's another bit.
The story mode is short as well, for what it's worth.
Yeah, I watched all the recap videos and I think they all end with someone dying in a volcano. So,
or do they? Do they die in the volcano?
Well, yeah, that's actually a good point. None of them actually die. I think Heihachi is thrown in a volcano 4 times and he keeps coming back.
I think unless they're bringing him back in DLC, he's dead. I think there's even an interview.
Yeah, I've heard he's not in this game at all.
Yeah, I actually saw an interview where I can't remember who it was. It was one of the developers or doesn't matter. Someone was like, no, he's dead. he's dead. He ain't coming back. Will they bring him back in DLC? Probably.
Do you know the story where he died in the one game and then the boss in the next game was like his grandfather who everyone else thought was dead? Yeah. It was Jinpachi. It's like, what the fuck is this game?
Best.
Yeah. You need to watch the anime on Netflix now.
Oh, yeah.
Don't do that. It's bad.
Where does that even take place?
It adapts the third game. Okay. Where Jin first arrives, basically.
Hilarious. I'd watch that.
it's got Ogre.
That's a big bad. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice. Not a great anime, but still interesting.
Love to see it. That is Tekken 8. What a time.
Tekken 8. You need to put Liam Neeson in there.
I will find you.
Yeah.
And I will throw you off the cliff.
I mean, it's... There's been more ridiculous things in Tekken, clearly. So
yeah,
man with gun, probably not, probably on the lower end of ridiculousness.
Lots of nonsense.
Yeah.
Cool. So that is all I have been playing. You've also played a bunch of stuff. What do you want to start with?
Yeah, let's chat about a weird one, Ultros. So it's a game I got in for review for GameSpot, my reviews up there. I had not heard of this game until I was offered it, essentially. And then I looked it up and I was like, huh, Metroidvania, got a cool style. The artist on it, Alhevo, did Hotline Miami. So I was like, okay,
oh, yeah, I didn't intrigued. Know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So same artist behind Hotline Miami, or one of the artists behind Hotline
Looks
Miami.
Looks nothing like Hotline Miami, just to be clear.
Does not, no, but it's got a very, very interesting style to it. So the way I can describe this game's look is that it's like,
drugs.
What if like a biomechanical sort of sensibility, so sort of like Alien, you know what I mean? Where a ship is like very fleshy and gross and alive. Combined with like a ridiculously strong acid trip, where colors are all vibrant and bright. You've got these neon pinks and greens, and like everything is just in your face and you know, popping out of the screen. That's kind of what this game looks like. And I think it looks phenomenal. It's just really great, is so distinct and so beautiful. And it does sometimes get in the way of itself, where because there's so much happening on screen, trying to pass what is in the foreground and what's in the background and what's interactable and what's like actually parts of like the main path can sometimes get in the way. But I never found myself like overly frustrated by that. Just like every now and then I'd be like, wow, I'm glad I saw this, because that seems like something I could have missed and it would have annoyed the shit out of me. But at its core, this is 100% like, or 90% a Metroidvania. You're in this alien ship, which is called the Sarcophagus, and it is holding back this like godly evil, and you need to travel to various different biomes to kind of release the barriers to unleashing this evil. And the reason for that is one of the game's other core twists that is introduced about an hour into it, is that this is also like a time loop game. So every time you complete a major objective, the game like restarts. The Sarcophagus kind of like kicks in this like security protocol where this evil entity is escaping and it needs to like reset time to keep it back. And you're essentially trying to escape this time loop because you want to get the fuck off of the ship. So you know, are you a good guy? Are you a bad guy? You can decide. The loop is quite interesting, though, because it takes you right back to the start, as in you don't have a weapon. You lose all of your upgrades. You lose even all of your core upgrades that you get as part of like the Metroidvania loop, you know, your core ability upgrades. And at first it seems a bit frustrating because it's like, why do I have to spend like 2-3 minutes running back to the same place to get my sword? Yeah. And why do I have to spend another 10 minutes going back to this place so I can get back my fucking double jump ability? But as the loops go on, you start using these seeds more and more. There's a big like a gardening aspect to this game where there are different types of seeds that can only be planted in certain areas, and they each have different abilities. And when you start understanding those abilities, you can start using them to create, firstly, shortcuts throughout the world, because some seeds will grow like trees that break open barriers that, like, you know, completely break open like paths to areas. Some will create like hanging vines that allow you to swing to areas without needing a double jump, or just, you know, omit areas entirely. Others will create these little bushes that give you speed boosts, so you can, if you put them on vertical walls, you can run up walls. If you put them horizontally on the ground, you can now launch yourself forward with a jump. Stuff like that. The problem is that some of these seeds take a loop to grow properly. So you have to have the foresight to plant them on a single loop. Yeah, like do an objective, loop back and then you're like, cool, I've opened up all of these places now because I planted these seeds. Where can I explore next?
Mm.
And that sort of balance, that sort of push and pull of like exploration that is governed by your past decisions is a very clever idea, I think, that makes the otherwise pretty familiar Metroidvania formula, you know, stand out quite a bit.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to get super in depth with that sort of stuff to just beat the game the first time. I think the critical path is pretty loose with how it lets you complete its objectives in various orders. Some areas obviously require certain abilities, you know, as any Metroidvania would. But I didn't feel the need to really, you know, like plan out my routes every single loop to finish the game. Where it comes into play is more a optional objective that you only get exposed to, I would say, probably halfway through the experience, which is super, super interesting. I'm not going to like talk about what it is, because I think it gives away a lot about how you can play this game far beyond your initial credits role. I just think it's one of the most interesting ways a Metroidvania has recontextualized its world and reinvigorated like its exploration. Like, think about a game like Hollow Knight, where say you've explored 80% of the map and then you discover something and it's given you a very compelling reason to go and re-explore that map.
Yeah.
Like completely. Like everything you've seen, everything you've picked up on visually, you're like, oh wait, I've seen those things in so many different places. Now I know what they're actually for.
Okay.
It's very, very smart and very clever. And that aspect of the game starts getting very complicated, because at that point you can now control when you want to restart a loop, because you've kind of like completed the game. But you need that, because you need to plan
your routes
and routes to places so carefully that you need to have a fundamental understanding of how these mechanics work. And yeah, there's a lot of depth to this game, and I think it's really, really, really fun.
Nice.
And I think you 100% would love this game. Yeah.
How long was your...
Even if you're just playing the main path took me about 15 hours.
Okay, that's quite...
Yeah,
quite,
it wasn't too bad. But I've been chipping away at the side stuff, or the optional stuff, because I want to see what the ending, like how the ending changes if I achieve this objective. But it's racking my brain in some parts, in a good way. So
that's good though.
Yeah, great little game. It's out on PlayStation and PC.
Damn it seems like and the yeah, perfect
just another
Switch
surprise
game.
Yeah, it actually would be great. Is it on Switch? I don't think it's on Switch, but it would be great on Switch. I've heard anecdotally that the colors of that game on the Steam Deck OLED look unbelievable.
I'm sure.
So yeah, I would Nintendo love to
OLED,
see that.
Imagine. Oh.
Nintendo OLED.
Oh, come on.
So yeah, that's Ultros. It's rad. You should give it a go if you're interested in those sorts of... Okay. Also, combat that is very juggle focused and it is very satisfying.
Nice.
You can do this thing where you swipe an enemy up in the air, and then if you launch yourself up in there and hit them, it will like pause in midair and you can aim where you want to launch them down to another enemy, and you can like keep juggles going that way.
That's cool.
Real good.
Nice. Sounds like a good time.
Yeah.
Cool.
What else do we have? I've forgotten the list
like
of
a
stuff.
Dragon.
Right. Okay. So this very different. I've barely played this in comparison. I've played maybe just like 2 or 3 hours of Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth.
Which means you've barely played the game.
Literally barely played the game. I mean, most of the first half an hour was just cutscenes and learning about characters. A quick background. I don't really have a large background with the series, with Yakuza and Like a Dragon. I've attempted Yakuza 0 like twice. Both times bounced off of it. And I've tried like the second time, at least, I played a lot. I was very interested by Yakuza 7, which was Like a Dragon, which was the first time that this game's protagonist was introduced.
Yeah.
Ichiban. But yeah, I don't feel like I need to catch up on everything to dive into Infinite Wealth. And the first 2 or 3 hours have done a pretty good job of, you know, it will never give you the full backstory of this really intricate series.
Yeah.
In such a short space of time. But I think they've given me enough information to go on to at least have a setup for what this game might be. So I'm still in Japan as Ichiban. He's kind of like working at a job, higher place, like, you know, where people who are down on their luck can come and try and get a job. And there's been a huge dissolution of like the Yakuza clans, probably the events of the previous game. And so there's loads of these people on Yakuza looking for work, and Ichiban, being a previous Yakuza himself, kind of like understands the plight of these former criminals who now have to like try and find work, even though the government is banning them from getting work or being able to rent an apartment or even be able to like purchase a cell phone plan for 5 years after leaving the Yakuza, which seems a bit crazy.
Seems a bit much. So
that's kind of like the premise of this, is like you are helping these people find work in areas like legal work in areas of the field where their skills are useful. Like one guy early on is hired to work for a security company where he goes in and steals things at different shops so that they can evaluate their security systems. It's like that sort of stuff. It's like quite clever. But all of this is kind of like setting up the heart of the story of like Ichiban being this like hero of the downtrodden. And like everyone in the city kind of knows him for that. He's like the hero around there. And I'm very curious to see how it takes him from this setting, this scenario,
to,
and plops him in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Which is very different. And just a completely different setting for the game. I'm having a good time. I like the change to the turn-based combat that was introduced in the previous game. Although I've seen that this one has expanded on that quite a bit. It's like quite like action focused in a way. You get to move around during your turn. You've got this like radius around you that you can move around in, and that allows you to change your positioning before you decide on like an action. So you can maybe try line up to enemies, or you can move around so that you're closer to like a weapon, like a bike, so that when you press attack, he'll pick that up instead of just using his fists.
Of course.
It's very contextual. Yeah, of course. You have to use a bike instead of your fists. That's just how this works. It's very contextual in that manner. It's also quite active, where like if you use a special ability, there's button presses that you can input that increase like the damage of that. When you are receiving damage from other enemies, you can time presses of like circle to try and perfect guard and take less damage from those attacks. So it's not just like press attack, wait for three people's turns to, you know, go, and then it's your turn again. You are active in every single moment of this gameplay. So it does make it feel a lot more action-y. It's quite an interesting wrinkle to turn-based strategy, you know, in the same way that Final Fantasy VII has kind of redefined that in its own way as well. And I quite like these interpretations of these turn-based formulas. So it's nowhere near as much of a Persona as I expected it to be in terms of the combat department, but I kind of like that. It seems like it's going to have a lot of depth, and for a game that is 40, 50, 60 hours long, that's kind of required. So now I'm keen to get into it. I've heard this game doesn't really get going until hour 10, so I'm very far from that still. But I'm far more engrossed than I was in the early hours of Yakuza 0, which felt, I don't know, I from the get-go there, I just was not vibing with it. And I was like waiting for something to grab me. But I think Ichiban is just a really endearing character, and I really like him. It's really good. Also, just play with the Japanese voiceovers. It's really, really, really good.
I'm sure. This is one of those games where I know I'd absolutely love it, but
I think you would, I really do.
I think the thing that always puts me and others off, it's like, oh my God, it's Yakuza or Like a Dragon. There's a million titles that came before it. Where do I even begin?
Yeah.
And then, if not that any person would do this, but if I were to play all of them are 40, 50, 60 plus hours long. It's just, it's like,
and some of them are old now, like
mammoth undertaking. Yeah.
The gameplay is old for a lot of them. But that was my thinking. I was just like, I'm never going to do.
Yeah. This. You might as like, well just pick I'm it just, up.
Exactly. Like if I'm thinking like, oh, to play the game that is coming out today, I have to play seven other games. Like I'll just never get to it. By the time if I even make it, like I'll be burnt out on it. So like, why not just give this one a go? You know, and if I'm really into it and I really want to understand the story in more nuanced ways, YouTube you can exists. Either start playing the other ones or YouTube it. You know, a lot of people are introduced to new things like this, you know, out of order, and then they go back and play things and then appreciate it in a whole new way. So
yeah.
I think, you know, coming from a perspective of like, I don't know enough about the story to say if you need to play the others, I just know that like I'm not feeling lost at the beginning of this game. Like I feel like I've got enough to go on already. And yeah, so I think it does a good job there. But that does mean these first 2-3 hours, super exposition heavy. Like, oh my God.
Like what is going on?
Like amazing. Recapping of events when characters weren't even asking for them. You know what I mean? So yeah.
It's like I'm glad you asked.
Yes,
like,
I'm having a bad day. It's like this time 3 years ago when the Yakuza clans died. And I was like, what? Like, what are you talking about?
Spoilers. Oh my God.
Yeah. No, it's good. It's real fun. It's also just goofy. It's just really, really stupid.
Yeah, I think, like, I know why I'd love the Yakuza series is because it is this thing of it's super serious until it's not. It's like it straddles both.
It is a telenovela.
Yeah,
with 100% comedy. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, us two good Portuguese boys coming from households where those Portuguese telenovelas are on all the time. We can understand what a good one is.
I'm the drama.
The drama.
The drama. Yeah.
And even better, it's in a language we don't understand again. So it's just so nostalgic.
This hits all the right feels.
This one has subtitles at least.
Amazing. Oh yeah. Thank God.
Yeah, thank goodness.
But I think that's Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth.
Yeah, that's pretty that's much all I can say playing. About it now. It's a lot. It's a lot.
It's a lot. All new releases. I won't get into it on this episode, but I snorted another playthrough of Bloodborne.
Oh my God.
And DLC, which has led me to playing Lies of P, which I'll talk about at some stage.
Ooh, yes.
Maybe by the next episode. Maybe I will have rolled credits. I don't know. I'm 14 hours in. I think I'm halfway-ish. I don't actually know.
Oh, wow. Is it really that long?
Yeah, I think it's pretty long. We'll see.
Wow.
Real good game, though.
Bloodborne's short by today's, like, FromSoft standards.
I think Bloodborne's not short to... Oh, maybe from standards, yeah. But, I mean, if you're a newcomer, my first playthrough was, like, 25, 30 hours, if I recall.
Mm. But even that, I mean, compared to, like, a Dark Souls 3...
Oh, yeah, it's not super long. It's like, my playthrough now, I rolled credits on the... didn't roll credits. I got to the final boss in the main game in, like, 9 hours, 9.5 hours.
Yeah, that's wild.
So it just helps knowing exactly where to go. You just spend way less time trying to get.
Were you just doing
bosses.
A straight run to the final boss? You weren't doing all the optional.
I've done everything. I did all the side content. I mean, I haven't done the DLC with that time.
So you did the choir and all of that.
Everything. It's the thing of, I think when you're playing the game for the first time, you really. Inspecting every area, it's like every last corner. Whereas, yeah, it was just I was killing enemy, run, pick up a thing, run, like really not taking my time. And it went pretty quickly. So,
is this the genesis of your Bloodborne speedrunning career?
Yes, I will say that whenever I play games like these, I always just throw up a speedrun on Twitch. And I shared one in Discord this week. Did you see the one I shared in Discord?
Oh, that
this
skip.
Week?
Yeah, that skip was unreal.
I was like, I was watching this. So for those of you who don't know, we're not diving to Bloodborne apart from this story, okay? I just had it on and it was in Japanese, I think. Because, I mean, it's during workouts. I just have it on no audio. I look up, I'm like, cool, this guy's starting a speedrun. And then... like literally exiting the hospital or whatever, like why is he not running away from that first wolf? Like it's a speed run. What are you doing? And I realized eventually that he was trying to get this wolf into certain position to attack in a specific way to
glitch him, knocks him out of the gate.
Glitch him through a gate, which you don't get to like way further in the game. You like skip so much stuff. Am I getting past
that? So there was a GDC run where I saw that the first time. But like I think the dude eventually gave up on doing it because like it's so like random sometimes. It's like a specific attack. You have to be standing at the exact right space.
Mm.
Otherwise you don't clip through. And eventually the runner was like, okay, I can't just sit here for half an hour trying this. I'm just gonna do a different
strategy. The OG speed run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder how much it breaks in the game that you've now like
well.
Yeah, because that gate you only unlock maybe like 2/3 down the way of the game.
Yeah, you get it so much later in the game. So it unlocks, you skip. Look, I don't know in terms of...
You skip most of Yharnam.
I need to watch the whole playthrough because I'm like, I don't know. Like, can you get to the last boss, for example? Because there are a few bosses you have to fight to trigger certain things to happen. So like, I don't know.
Like you need the Blood Moon. Like
But just in terms of seeing that and going like, oh my God, you've just... completely teleported to like halfway through the game just about. It's insane.
So, yeah. Do you know how From Software fixes that? What they do is they put a bag man right there. So if you clip through that door, the bag man just fucking takes you and then you've actually destroyed your entire run because you cannot escape that. You cannot
escape, yeah, it's true. Yeah. Fun fact, we really should stop talking about Bloodborne, but I did a playthrough where because I've always, in old Yharnam, there's that dude who shoots at you with a Gatling gun. I can't think of his name now, but there's a way
he's one of the hunters, yeah.
There's a way to like, not befriend him, but that he's not aggro. So there's a way, there's a way to get to old Yharnam, like via a back door, let's call it that, where you don't kill enemies and you can climb up that ladder to him and you can talk to him and he gives you, there's like a whole thing. But to do that, there's one part of the game where early on where the cathedral is, you can buy like a key to shortcut to another area. It costs 10,000 blood echoes. I mean, I think a lot of people don't do that because it's quite a significant cost. I did not see a single bag man on my run at all.
What?
Just the way I progressed it, just not a single bag man. I was like, what?
I wonder if there's a certain level of like number of enemies killed or things done that triggers them.
So it's supposed to trigger, if I'm not mistaken, when you kill the Bloodstarved beasts. Okay. But remember, you
haven't been to Old Yharnam.
You might do, because the game sort of leads you that way, right? Like you kind of go to Old Yharnam, you fight the Bloodstarved beast, then you end up...
Just getting, hilarious because it's an optional boss.
It's an optional boss, but the game leads you there practically. I mean, then... only then you get to Vicar Amelia. But because I'd done it in a completely wrong order, like I went straight to Vicar Amelia because I had this key to shortcut to that area, I ended up being the Bloodstarved Beast way later in my playthrough. And the Bagmen just never appeared. I was like, huh. I did not know that,
that
was
that is
a,
insane. Because those guys suck. I hate those guys.
They suck so much. Yeah.
So yeah, now that game's cool, man. It's just so many cool little things. Yeah. It like you said, it's weird that old Yharnam, like the game does funnel you there, but I do remember the first time I beat Bloodstarved Beast and then it's like, oh yeah, this is just a dead end. And I was like, are you fucking joking me? Like,
crazy.
Yeah, game's good.
Give us Bloodborne
game
2.
Game is good.
FromSoft. I'm telling you.
Give us Elden Ring DLC first. I guess rumor for February just isn't happening, hey?
Elden Ring released on the 25th of February 2 years ago.
There's no way they just shadow drop DLC. 25th there of Feb is no way.
Next week. Yes, that would be wild. Can you imagine? Can you imagine Elden Ring DLC drops? Final Fantasy VII Rebirth drops. I've got to get on a plane to attend some bozo's wedding.
all I'm saying, this is a perfect reason to buy a Steam Deck. You can play both those games on Steam Deck. Is my It is probably 2/3 of your total height, nice. But it is open.
Oh, cool. We'll see you for some Elden Ring DLC.
Couch co-op Elden Ring DLC.
My goodness. Oh,
good times.
But yeah, sorry, that was a little sidebar.
How you're like, I'm not going to talk about Liza P, but I'll talk about Bloodborne.
Oh, you know what I'm very close to finishing as well, which we'll finally talk about, is Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah.
I'm on that home stretch. So I think next episode we'll do the definitive talk about that game.
I don't know how we're going to do that because I'm super far from finishing that game.
I know. I'll spoil it for you. Don't worry.
No. So, what are you saying that Link is the hero and Zelda is saved?
My goodness.
Never.
Can't believe this.
Never. Ganon dies? What?
No, it's like, can you believe this? I don't know. Yeah. Let's see. But I think that is us all this week.
Yeah.
Slightly different format. No news. No questions. Mm-hmm. No game releases, mm-hmm. just all updates.
Only news is that Switch 2 might only be 2025. Oh, no.
That is genuinely upsetting.
Yeah, it is slightly upsetting. Like, I mean, it's a console release.
Come on, Nintendo. Give me a new Switch.
Would have loved it this year, but who knows? Rumors, yeah. rumors.
Cool.
That's been episode 248 of Checkpoint Chat. Not sure when a next one will be. Maybe... in a couple of... Actually, maybe we'll try plan one for when you're this side so that we do one in person. But we'll see. We'll see. No promises. No promises. Who can say?
This ambitious man. About to get married. Yeah. Wanting to record it.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Who knows? There will be lots to do in the 2 weeks that you are here. So we'll
Unreal.
See. But you can rest assured that between now and then we'll be playing a bunch and hopefully there'll be another... big substantial update like this in the near future.
And
there's not as many games coming out, but there are two or three big
stuff,
ones.
So. Yeah. But yeah, thank you for bearing with us if you are listening as we navigate this new way forward.
And it will keep changing and evolving as we go. But if you have any feedback, you can still email us.
Next
Checkpoint
episode,
Chat podcast,
10 minutes long. We're speedrunning everything we're playing.
Yeah. Just, it'll be a Bloodborne speedrun while we're podcasting.
Go.
Yeah.
Shit. Can
you
imagine?
You can email us at checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com if you just want to ask a question or on our social media platforms if you want to know anything else. But yeah, that's episode 248. Thank you so much for returning and listening. We'll be back soon-ish. Keep an eye out.
Cool.
Until then, have a great week, weeks, months, years, times. Have a good one. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.